up, Les Grimm? You're listening to KBOO Portland. This feels like home being here. Keep hip hop alive.
I'm one of 2.7 million children in the United States that has been impacted by parental incarceration.
I've been in and out of foster care and been all over the place since she hasn't been in my life.
I came to prison broken. Just 2 months after arriving, a judge agreed with DHS's recommendation to terminate my parental rights.
When my crime occurred, I was living in domestic violence. I was forced into prostitution. I was a young girl who was living on the streets. I had battered women syndrome.
Everyone has to do their time, take accountability, but at the same time, let's not punish the child more too.
Join us, 11 a.m., March 31st, to hear from mothers who serve time in prison, discuss bills now before the Oregon legislature to help incarcerated mothers and their children.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
Good afternoon. Good evening. Good morning. We are having ourselves another episode of Culture in Motion. I'm your host, Mike Crenshaw. I'm cooling out with Ryan Danley. Co-host,
how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. We had a nice little warm up. We're just gonna be talking to the people without any additional guests today. I was inspired by the idea of just talking about some of our favorite music, be it albums or artists or songs that we're kind of using to keep ourselves going these days. And I was inspired personally by listening to the latest Pharoah Monch contribution with his band 13. Did you have a chance to listen to that?
Yeah, I listened to it when it broke, and I mean he's been putting out quality contact forever. Quality content forever, and I just love his, I just love where he's going, and I love them, like the massive reception to his new stuff. I mean, it's just so good, and it's just nice to see like artists of his caliber, like getting that love. You know what I mean? Like it's because he's done nothing but good. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Pharoah Monch is one of the artists who I think, in my own artistic development and work, I want that. He's an artist that I have no problem saying that's how I want to sound, you know.
Right.
Not in a way where I would be trying to steal or appropriate or imitate, but yeah, in terms of the clarity and the energy and the intensity of what he's up to as an artist, it far exceeds what most commercial hip hop is doing. So it's always really refreshing for me to check it out. Because it makes me feel encouraged to keep doing what I'm doing. For the listeners, the album is called A Magnificent Day for an Exorcism. So check it out if you're interested. If you don't already know Pharoah Monch, you know, he spells his name P-H-A-R-O-A-H-E. I have no problem doing some free promotion for the guy, because
yep,
he's dope.
Yeah, I mean, if you get into his like early stuff too, like Organized Confusion and stuff like that, they've been putting out great hip hop and great creative thought provoking artistic hip hop for a lot of years, and he's our age, you know, and so
yeah, 48,
yeah, and he's still in the game, you know, still putting out probably the best record so far this year, you know.
Yeah, doing some stuff similar to what he's doing now, in terms of the intensity, the clarity, the honesty, the intellectual power, you know, of an artist not willing to dumb down their art, right? For over 30 years, you know.
Yep.
So that's cool because it shows us a couple of things. One, and this is something I always fight to remember and to center in my approach, not just as an artist, but as a consumer. And that is, you know, if a jazz musician can still do their thing at 80, you know, 90 something years old, why can't a hip hop artist?
For sure. I mean, it's, I think we, a lot of us get into this, like, and I mean, this is a little self-serving as well, considering that we're both people in our 40s, or, you know, but like there's like this outside pressure in our lives to be something. And we put this pressure on ourselves to be this by the certain point and do this by the, you know, and, you know, particularly with, you know, like some people's lives don't work out like that. You know what I mean? And some people, like, you just hit your strides at different times. And it's like, there's no reason. Like, I feel like I'm at my artistic peak at 45. You know what I mean? Just like in writing jokes and my thought processes on the, you know, like doing words together and things. You know, I think that, like, my life and my experiences has created a situation, like, you know, it's like the Dead Poet Society, which is like, close your books. You're not even ready to read this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's like sometimes you got to go out there and, like, live and do that. And that happens different. You know, some people, like Bootsy Collins, can be 15 and be there, you know, and some people, you know, like, you know, some people might put out their, have a whole career and put out their best record at 45, you know, or 48 years old, you know, and it's a, you know, they want us to, like, sort of, like, it's, I think it's convenient for the, I mean, it's, you know, not to get into a conspiracy theory about everything, but, like, it's convenient for people for us to tamp it down as we get older, you know what I mean? But, like, but the thing is, like, there is no reason that, like, that, you know, we can't do this, you know?
Well, and I think, too, there, you know, there's a lot of information out there that talks about the way the industry, the record industry, chose to market hip hop towards a certain demographic, which would, I think it was like the 14 and 25 year old suburban white kid, right? So, and the reason being is because they had the most expendable income. So at that point, the range of reflection that you're going to find when you listen to the most well-promoted commercial hip hop is a range of reflection that white record execs have imagined to be the most appealing for the white teenager, that's middle class and upper middle class. So it's all, you know, it's a lot of it is a bunch of imaginary stuff, you know, because you're not, when we listen to rappers, you know, there's been documentaries for ages, right, made about hip hop, and they'll be talking to these young brothers rhyming in a cypher who are all talking about killing people and gunplay, and the documentary filmmakers will go, well, why are you just talking about that? And the guys always go, well, I could talk about more stuff, but nobody wants to hear that. And yeah. So, like, again, we internalize as consumers the values that other people have placed on, you know, the spectrum of creative expression. Without really knowing, like, well, what would entertainment be like if there was more to choose from, and more options were actually easier to find.
Yeah, and right, and it's like, you know, and it's just like we've gotten the stuff, whether when it was good for the, like when they were like, okay, well, hair metal's done, so here's Nirvana. We'll do this, you know, and it's like, rather than it being like, oh, well, there's actually a ton of kids who like listen to bands like Nirvana or like punk rock or whatever, we can do that. It's just like, nope, we got to focus on this and focus on that. And and when you start going down that path, it's you know, I bring this up a bit about how there's this like idea that people are more offended these days than they've ever been, or like the modern era is more offended. And it's like, no, actually the modern era is not more offended. What's happening is that you are just living in a world now where the media that you get, the response that you get, isn't just what like white middle-class suburban people get sold advertising to. I mean, when we were growing up, you had a situation where like the people at MTV needed to sell ad space to suburban kids. So they put that on there. The people at the newspaper You need to sell ad space to suburban families. So they put that on there. The people at the movie theater needed to sell tickets to, you know what I mean? So everything kind of came down to that.
Right.
And you know, with the invention of the internet and giving people voices, there's no more offense. People have been tired of being treated like crap.
Right.
Now we just get to hear about it. You know what I mean? And then people are like, cancel culture. Oh, cancel culture. This is like, no, we're tired of hearing your crap. You know what I mean? We don't want to live in a world where we have people who use oppressive language and punch down and use words that are violent and, you know what I mean, towards people. And you know, it's like, and that's it. And that's a really hard, you know, like, it's a really hard thing for a lot of people who made a living free that. Like, you know, I'm a stand up, and you're like, look at all these old club comedians who got to say whatever they wanted. But now they have to like, you know, like, go, oh, I can't write an easy joke about a trans person anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you know, because people want to be treated with respect. And it's, I mean, it's like, you know, sorry, you have to work harder at your jokes and not be oppressive.
Well, I think, you know, there's a couple of facets to this conversation that I actually find helpful when I'm just thinking about it, because I think about it a lot. It's in my head as an artist. I think about it as an activist, as a public figure. I think about it. Somebody recently had said something on social media about when Tipper Gore tried to cancel, you know, NWA, a couple other acts. Was that cancel culture? And of course it was.
Yeah.
You know? But it was also coming from the direction of those who were in power. And it was aimed at people who had a lot less power. Right. And so what you're talking about is you're talking about something that is diametrically, you know, directed, in that you're talking about people who have historically not had a lot of power using their voice as an asset and a feature of social media to speak truth to power and to hold power accountable. And so those are two very different things that both get called cancel culture. And I think that the conversation gets confusing when people in power become critical of cancel culture, because what they're critical of them being held accountable. That's what they're actually being critical of. Mm-hmm. What they identify is that being held accountable by the public is a threat to your power, right? I think that there is also a culture when something becomes normalized. And these are things that had been developed by people in power that were taken, adopted, pivoted by people who didn't have a lot of power. There are older traditions though of, you know, when people take to the streets and demand that somebody loses their job because they're chief of police, right? That kind of public outcry in the wake of police murder, is that really different than cancel culture when we're being critical of cancel culture? I don't know.
I think that there's this, I mean, I think that there's this idea that like everything is equal in the eyes of everything, that every situation is sort of like, but there's a canceling artists. Is real different than canceling fascists. You know what I mean? Like, there is no double standard in this. Like, canceling people who have fascist, dangerous ideas,
right,
that are, you know, we are so comfortable with racism existing in our society that we see it as like a valid political opinion.
Right.
But it is not a valid political opinion.
Right.
Racism and other forms of oppression, you know, against women and LGBTQ and, you know, et cetera, are attacks on innocent people.
Well, so what would you say, I'm going to be the devil's advocate, to people who would say, well, who gives you the right to decide what a valid political opinion is? And if you engage in deciding what a valid political opinion is and try to censor somebody else's opinion that you don't agree with, Doesn't that make you fascist?
Well, there's, I mean, well, I mean, it's just like, okay, sure. So like, if I walk up to you and punch you on the street, or if you come into my house and I punch you, yes, they're both punches, but there is difference. Like the idea that everything's a, like, that is like some of that like really clever, like white power Nazi, it's like white history month idea of like, if this is this, then why can't be this? And this is this and this. It's because we are trying to protect people from harm.
So what you're
technically like when we say you like racists and stuff like that need to be accountable for the pain that they cause people, like there is like allowing artists to be artists causes nobody any pain,
right? But then one could say, well, what about Marilyn Manson? They're an artist. Or what about Louis C.K.? He's an artist. So,
yeah, but those people's actions separated from the art.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't care. Like, I was never a Marilyn Manson music fan. Like, I was just, you know, like, when that stuff came out, I was looking for, like, Agnostic Front and, you know, Gorilla Biscuits and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I was never a fan of his music. But like, I honestly just didn't pay him much mind until the fact that, like, he's a creep and an abuser and, you know, like, a sexual assault. Like, Louis C.K., like that situation's like terrible. Like he, like, you know, like there was, he had a lot of leverage in that industry, and he used that leverage to be for predatory behavior, like Harvey Weinstein. It's like that's like those guys weren't canceled because of their art; they were canceled because they did terrible things to people. Right. You know what I mean? And like, and like, there is like, and I am sorry, but like being a racist, there at some point there is, yes, maybe I'm not the be-all end-all, but there are things that we can agree on as a society that are bad.
Yeah,
murder's bad, like, you know what I mean? But like we've all agreed that, but we just haven't gotten there with racism because it's so prevalently in our world, even though it like clearly causes harm, you know. And so when we say like it needs to stop because it's causing harm to people, that these aren't just rogue police officers.
No.
That the police are just the armed enforcement of the status quo. Yeah. You know, they're out there killing black men because the world has deemed black men as scary. Right. And their job is to, like, so when those negative things get said, those end up all that negative energy ends up in the bullet of a cop's gun. You know what I mean? And so, like, as a group of people, we have to say, like, this is a simple state of, like, affairs. If I say, if you come, you know, I mean, like, so stopping that is defense of people, you know. And I mean, you can, sure, I can make, you know what I mean, but, like, you can make all sorts of arguments and stuff like that. But, like, even, like, when they were after, like, communists, and that's how we thought of, well, it was just, like, the communists. But, you know, the thing is like, we get to be communists in America. Communism is a legitimate, like, political, like, thought process. And, like, whether people like it or not, it is a legitimate thought process. And that, so, like, arresting people for communism is, like, those people have done nothing wrong to anybody except for, like, present a type of government that people don't like.
Right, but, about a different economic system.
Exactly.
That wouldn't benefit the few at the expense of the masses, so.
Right, so, like, and, like, but like, but if you say something racist, the only thing that comes out of racism is harming people who are in it. And that's all there is to it. There's no political value. There's no political value to it at all. It's not a
positive. You know, being a black man, I just want to note, you know, we're killed by police as black men disproportionately, as are black women, as our black trans men, black trans women, and black people, as, you know, our indigenous people, proportionately based on the amount of people in this country and the population that are indigenous, you know, the murder rate is even worse. It doesn't mean that there are more indigenous people when you add up the sum total that are killed by police, but it means that proportionately The percentage of Indian people, Native American people, that are killed by police is higher, even than those of blacks. And I don't say that to encourage people to argue or debate whether one person's set of grievances against the powers that be and the police and the state and the violent forces of the state are more legitimate or less legitimate than another, because we're all suffering. And these needs and desires of people to critique and confront and to have radical change and to see that isn't something that people need to be in competition over. It's something that people need to be working on together. And everybody's not ready to do that, you know? And if somebody's not ready to work in solidarity with other people, then I'm gonna just accept that. And I'm gonna look for where solidarity is happening. So, you know, back to, you know, art, I wanna see more art in the public sphere, you know, in the environment. I wanna see more art available to consumers and people who want to experience the types of messages that is, these types of messages that is radical, and that it not only holds the root causes and the systems and the people and the thinking that is part of the problem and the cause of the problem accountable, but that also creates a vision for something different so that we can begin to collectively imagine the kind of world that we want to see, as opposed to always reacting to the world we have.
For real.
Yeah. That's not easy stuff to do, but I mean, you know, put some paint in that water gun. Go see what you can make.
Have you seen the, have you been by the old Gorman fireplace? I think that's what it was called.
Yeah, I want to get in there. It's pretty easy to approach that building on foot and walk beyond the fence.
Yeah, I got in there the other day, and it's great. It's just like, I don't know who they got to do that outside of that, but if anybody knows, have them hit us up, because it was it's beautiful. Like, the work on that building is beautiful. Like,
yeah.
I'm a graffiti fan, you know, it's one of the, and just like to walk around that, actually. Have them on my TikToks walking around there and then going inside. And inside's cool. They got like, there's like a little skate ramp set up and people just been bombing in there and having fun. And I don't know, like, you just like go in there and you just like, just felt healthy. I don't know. It felt like art space and like people like living, you know what I mean? And like, and it's like this whole world with this whole like last year with everything like being like so like, you know what I mean? It was just nice to see like, those bright colors and that paint and just like that, you know, using those cans for just the good, you know.
Like, yes.
Yeah, let's check it out. We should do a show from there.
Yeah. Well, I stuck my eyes in there, but didn't really put my body in there. I wasn't sure. I was with some people. I wanted to make sure it was safe, in terms of what you got to crawl through. But I planned on going back. I don't know, you know, they've got the barrier up around it, the cyclone fence or whatever. So
yeah.
That means it's slated for demolition at some point. So I don't know how long that's gonna be there, but thanks for encouraging me to go check out the gallery in the space.
Yeah, it's good to see. It's just good to see the people's art. I mean, I'm sorry, like, you know what I mean? Like, I know that people probably don't want to hear about it and people don't like the graffiti and stuff like that, but I love to see it. I love to see the sound walls along I-5 with pieces with the big bombs around there, like up around North Portland, all look great. And I don't know, looks cool, looks good to me, you know.
To me, graffiti is a sign of a healthy social ecosystem.
Yeah.
Because the people are expressing themselves, even though it might not have the green light of the state, you know. And just like, there are codes, you know, in the underworld, there are codes. And there are some people out here writing that don't follow the code, but there are other people out there who are not gonna actually destroy a working person's personal property.
Right.
You know, and you know, there's a difference between personal property and private property. You know, my bicycle is my personal property.
Right.
Okay. But that building that's empty, that doesn't serve any purpose except for to make money for a developer or an owner, that's private property. It actually doesn't serve the public in any way, shape, or form, you know? So when you see people writing on stuff, ask yourself a question. Is it private property or is it personal property? And who does that property serve? And I want you to ask the same question when you see a billboard that advertises, you know, whatever, cigarettes, liquor, eye makeup. You know, what's the difference when I have to look at that billboard when I'm going from A to B and think about what's on it? What's the difference between that and a sticker by my man Scam, you know?
Right. I think if there's anything this last year has told us, has taught us, and I think that people should be paying attention to, is these old ideas, you know, like this world, you know, things are going to change, you know what I mean? Like there is change of a foot. Like there's this idea that, like, you know, like things like graffiti are terrible. You know, it used to be like tattoos on people's arms mean you're a criminal, and you know what I mean? And like, or like men with long hair, or blah, you know what I mean? And sometimes you have to look at it like, you know, like we're slowly degrading those sort of, like, you know, that status quo from that era. And it's like, you know what I mean? And it's like I just couldn't imagine being like a graffiti paint over. That's your day. You know what I mean? Yeah, like
the people who got into that industry are former graffiti writers. I'm sure there's a couple of really intelligent folks that were getting paid to to go over some of the stuff they put up. But we won't go into that. And yeah. I think that's our time though for culture today, man.
Good talking. Always.
Yeah, man. We'll talk soon, and thank you for tuning in to Culture in Motion on Cable. Peace, y'all. Peace.
KBOO 90.7. You don't know it's your girl Tasha T. Thank you.
listening to KBOO Portland.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change, but recognizing KBOO along with your family